When President Donald Trump arrived in Beijing this week, he was greeted by an honor guard and a sea of Chinese schoolchildren, jumping up and down, waving flowers and the flags of both nations. "The children were amazing," President Trump said later. One can easily see him wanting to reciprocate with similar pageantry if Chinese leader Xi Jinping accepts his invitation to visit Washington in September. But beyond the pomp, Mr. Xi also delivered a strong warning to Mr. Trump, as Anne Scott Tyson reports from Beijing. "Sound U.S.-China relations depend, above all else, on how the two sides handle one issue, Taiwan." It's Friday, May 15th. This is the Monitor Daily Podcast. Good morning, I'm Linda Feldman. First, our curation of news briefs from our writers around the world. Many of these are developing stories. Find the latest updates at csmonitor.com/newsbriefs or on our app. Israel plans to sue the New York Times for an article on alleged sexual violence against Palestinians. Mutual accusations from Israelis and Palestinians of wartime sexual abuse came to a head this week. On Monday, New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof detailed accusations of sexual violence against Palestinian detainees in Israeli prisons. The following day, an Israeli nonprofit organization published a comprehensive report of rape and sexual assaults committed by Palestinian militants during and after the October 7, 2023 attack. Israel and Hamas deny their respective allegations. On Thursday, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel would file a defamation lawsuit against the New York Times. He called the article a blood libel about rape that tries to create a false symmetry between Israel and Hamas. Drone warfare in the Ukraine war is alarming nearby nations. As Russia ramped up its barrage of aerial strikes on Ukraine for the third consecutive day, Hungary summoned the Russian ambassador. Russian drones skirted close to Hungary's border and attacked a Ukrainian area that is home to a Hungarian minority. The diplomatic meeting portends a shift toward less amicable relations with Moscow under new Hungarian Prime Minister Peter Magyar. Meanwhile, in Latvia, Prime Minister Evika Selinja resigned after several incidents in which Ukraine's drones entered Latvia after straying off route during attacks on Russia. Ms. Selinja's government was accused of being ill-prepared to defend Latvian airspace. Also, the U.S. Senate agreed to withhold its own pay during government shutdowns. Under the unanimous resolution, the Secretary of the Senate would suspend the salary payments for the chamber's elected officials if there's a shutdown of one government agency or more. A recent partial shutdown over funding the Department of Homeland Security lasted a record 76 days. The resolution, introduced by Republican Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana, is intended to spur senators to find solutions to impasses during shutdowns. The Senate resolution only comes into effect after November's midterm elections, and the agreement doesn't include the House of Representatives. Now, today's Monitor stories. As always, you can go to csmonitor.com or our app for the latest news. Talks between Chinese leader Xi Jinping and U.S. President Donald Trump on Thursday struck a positive tone as Mr. Trump avoided sensitive issues and focused instead on business. Anne Scott Tyson reports from Beijing for the Monitor. As new Federal Reserve Chair Kevin Warsh navigates surging inflation and pressure from President Trump to lower rates, consumers may face delayed interest rate cuts and shifts in the central bank's approach to the economy. Laurent Belsey reports for the Monitor. Consumers worldwide have felt squeezed for many reasons, including the prolonged closure of the Strait of Hormuz. So they've come up with their own solutions. Contributor Ogar Monday, Mark Sappenfield, and Audrey Thiebert report from Abuja, Nigeria, Berlin, and Boston for the Monitor. In the memoir, Small Town Girls, Jane Ann Phillips tells of the rural upbringing that set her on the path to becoming a writer. She also pays tribute to Southern authors who inspired her, such as Stephen Crane. Contributor Heller McAlpin writes for the Monitor. Now, commentary from the Monitor's editorial board on civility on campus. In many parts of the United States, the arrival of spring has been fleeting and fickle, but there's no mistaking that college graduation season is here, with the strains of pomp and circumstance, turning of tassels, tossing of caps, and protests over choices of commencement speakers arising along lines that reflect the country's political divides. Rutgers, South Carolina State, and Utah Valley are among the universities that recently disinvited speakers after objections by campus activists. Others have forged ahead, as New York University did on Thursday, with the choice of one of its own, professor, author, and free speech advocate Jonathan Haidt. Student government leaders had objected to hearing from Dr. Haidt, known for his critiques of social media and diversity initiatives, as well as what he views as the coddling of young people from having to deal with the friction of differing worldviews. Despite such protests and even walkouts, a countertrend is quietly taking hold. Increasingly, public and private colleges are establishing study programs and research centers to reduce campus polarization and address sensitivities around controversial topics. On a deeper level, proponents say, these initiatives are about recentering a core purpose of higher education, the public good of training and equipping individuals for civic and civil engagement and the exercise of robust democratic citizenship. According to one source, there are now more than 45 centers of civic education at institutions in 25 states. Paul O. Caressa, the founding director of Arizona State University's School of Civic and Economic Thought and Leadership, launched in 2016, sees his school's role as restoring higher civics and upholding the political intellectual virtue of moderation, of avoiding extremes and single-mindedness. Johns Hopkins University President Ronald Daniels has argued that universities owe it to society and democracy to educate young people in the full suite of aptitudes necessary for good citizenship. The University of North Carolina's School of Civic Life and Leadership, which opened in 2023, has seen burgeoning student demand. The Wall Street Journal reported this week that nearly 1,000 are currently taking classes at the center, up from 85 in the fall of 2024. And earlier this month, Stanford University voted to expand and make permanent its pilot program, College, Civic, Liberal, and Global Education. Observing that students arrive with extraordinary academic preparation, but very little practice sitting with discomfort and engaging respectfully across difference, a university administrator indicated the program provides the language, community, and tools to do so. As the Monitor's Stephen Humphreys has reported, many universities see civil discourse as foundational. It's key to an ethos of free speech and open inquiry, rooted in mutual respect. These same tenets resound well beyond academia in the daily practice of self-governance and democracy, from town halls to state legislatures, and perhaps in the nation's capital. The stories you just heard are from today's newsletter. Find these stories and more at csmonitor.com or on our app. For more Monitor podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. For other audio offerings from our parent organization, go to christianscience.com/audio. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how, as we really trust each other to God's care, we find that healing is natural. Find the full column at csmonitor.com/csperspective. Thanks to today's audio production team, Ian Case, Victoria Hoffman, and Jingnang Peng.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor in Boston, Massachusetts, United States of America. Copyright 2026.